and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look at the story in the news that began the day after Donald Trump was inaugurated and has grown steadily into both a powerful political and social movement, which has already exposed men in high office and promises to sweep Trump from office in 2020, if not earlier. Lisa Graves, who served in all three branches of the federal government as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts, joins us to discuss the emerging political clout of American women who are both running for office and mobilizing at the grassroots. We will also examine the attempt underway led by Fox News to create an alternative reality of manufactured scandal to mirror the Mueller investigation and diminish its impact by dredging up fictional ties between Hillary Clinton and the ludicrous Uranium One deal, while the real uranium scandal is that Trump has opened up protected national parks in Utah that belong to the American people to uranium mining, which will desecrate national monuments and destroy Native American history, as well as sites for prehistoric dinosaur fossils. Then we continue the conversation about 2017 being the year of the woman with Adele Stan, a journalist based in Washington, who is a weekly columnist for The American Prospect, where her latest article is On the Road to Kleptocracy. She joins us to discuss the extent to which the emerging Me Too movement has exposed sexism, misogyny, harassment, and discrimination in the workplace across corporate America, inside the Congress and the U.S. government, and in the entertainment business. We will also assess how the Me Too movement relates to the emerging political activism of women in our politics and examine the growing number of women running for local, state, and national office and the prospects for a number of women on the Democratic side likely to run for president. And joining us now is Lisa Graves, who served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Graves.
Thanks, Ian. It's nice to be on your show.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And we're in between Christmas and New Year, and at the end of the year, looking back at the stories that dominated the year and looking ahead to stories that might also live on and come to some resolution, one hopes. But just looking back, could you make the case that 2017 is the year of the woman in politics, the emergence of women, the spontaneous demonstration that took place the day after Trump's inauguration? Millions of women around the world and across the country showed up. And lately, we're learning that an awful lot of women are running for political office, particularly on the Democratic side. So how would you describe, or do you accept that idea that 2017 could be referred to as the year of the woman?
I think that's definitely one way to see this year. It has been a really astonishing year in terms of the number of women from all backgrounds, from all walks of life, standing up and speaking out and really being involved politically in new ways. Some of the women who have been speaking and calling and marching have been active for a long time, but some women have joined this movement, in this wide movement, who have never marched before and who have felt compelled by the circumstances of Trump and his extreme agenda. And his background and a lot of the other things happening in our society to really stand up and speak out. And so I think there's been a tremendous exercise of the muscle, the power of women this year, and it's been, I think, a necessary exercise of that power given what we're confronting with this person who is the president of the United States and his terrible temperament and his background, his agenda, the extremeness of his agenda, and also this period in which so much has come to light about so many ways that women have been discriminated against or abused or assaulted by men in power, men like the president, but men in different professions, different fields who have abused their power in ways that echo the allegations that many women have made against Donald Trump himself.
Well, many of those men have found their careers ending in corporate America, in the media, like Matt Lauer, who, of course, was famous for his aggressive interview of Hillary Clinton during the election and his softball interview of Donald Trump. Donald Trump has not been held to account, though, has he? He denies the 17 to 19 women who've come forward. So how would you assess justice in this regard?
Well, justice has so far been denied the women who have been, in my opinion, have credibly claimed that they've been assaulted or mistreated by Donald Trump, including the young women, the teens at the beauty pageants where he would walk in on them unclothed, as more than one of them attested, and that he, in fact, in essence, bragged about in a radio show interview about that was one of his perks. To go behind the scenes at these pageants, and so you know, in terms of Trump, there has not yet been justice for both his past conduct and, quite frankly, for the array of things he's done this year and said this year that have been destabilizing, that have been destructive, that have added a level of chaos into the American political arena that we've never seen before from occupant of the White House. Both at the on the domestic level and internationally, I certainly hope that justice will come for Trump and that he will be held accountable both civilly and criminally for any and all of his transgressions.
But certainly the Me Too movement is emerging, and there have been, as I mentioned, prominent figures in journalism and in corporate America, Senator Al Franken, John Conyers and Trent Franks and others, their careers just are over one day to the next. So at least some people are being held to account.
That's right. There has definitely been a wave of accountability, I think, like we've never seen before in so many different fields. And that accountability has been forged by brave women speaking up, standing up, saying what happened to them publicly. Some of them saying it anonymously, some of them saying it in their own name. You can see the situation in Alabama as well, where you had someone who had risen to a very prominent role, Roy Moore, in that state as a supposed Christian crusader, but who, according to a number of accounts, had actually been banned from the shopping mall in the town that he had been living in for being a predator, someone who was pursuing high school girls when he was a 30-something prosecutor in the state. And those women who spoke out were subject to a lot of attacks by right-wing conservatives and the Christian right in that state. And those women withstood, the women who had never known each other, didn't know that what Roy Moore had done to them had happened to anyone else. They came out in response to, seriously strong investigative reporting, uncovering this story that had been not told in Alabama, notwithstanding the fact that Roy Moore had been elected to the state Supreme Court, and people had sort of felt like he could get away with being the sort of predator that his record, in my opinion, demonstrates.
And again, I'm speaking with Lisa Graves, who served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. Now, I don't know whether you caught this extraordinary display of sycophancy last week, Lisa, where the dear leader, Donald Trump, essentially sat back with this sort of smug smile on his face, with his protruded chin, Mussolini-like, as one by one his cabinet did a round robin, starting with Mike Pence, who issued forth the most syrupy, supine praise for the dear leader. And then, of course, there was a big photo op when they passed, the House and Senate passed the tax bill, with all of them lined up, smiling at each other, congratulating each other, and all of them going out of their way to praise the dear leader, McConnell, Ryan, Orrin Hatch, and Brady. It was truly disgusting. And the question arises, why does our strongman leader need this kind of sycophantic praise? This has to be a deeply insecure man.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, it was revolting, quite frankly, to see this display. I think you put your finger right on it. I mean, it's clear that Donald Trump has a serious personality disorder, to say the least. He's someone who apparently has to be babied and praised all the time. He's, according to investigative accounts, he's someone who's obsessed with how he's perceived on Fox News and other TV stations. He's someone who whose ego is outsized, to say the least. And I think he's someone who is demonstrably unfit to be president of the United States and to have the responsibilities of that office. He has misused those powers, and he's someone who is whose ego, I think, shows that he can be easily manipulated by foreign leaders, by them praising him, and by domestic leaders, by politicians who praise him versus those who properly and rightly criticize him under our First Amendment. And that tax bill is nothing more than a tax heist. I mean, it's a scam. It's something that is it's just a giveaway to the biggest corporations that have really been underwriting the Republican Party these many years, including some of the biggest corporations in the world, like Koch Industries, which is led by the Koch billionaires, the Koch brothers, David and Charles, who have been pushing that tax bill and many of those provisions as part of a once-in-a-generation opportunity to change the rules of the game for themselves and for the interests of themselves and the billionaires that are part of their network. And I think when the American people come back from this holiday season next year and they start seeing the consequences of that bill, both in next year and then beyond, there's going to be even greater anger toward Trump and toward the Republicans who have basically just been supine in supporting him in putting forward this corporate wish list that really hurts working people in this country, hurts the middle class, hurts really significant, important tax provisions that are there to protect ordinary people. And it really ends up being a giveaway to some of the richest, biggest people and corporations in the world. And it comes as Trump has continued to refuse to reveal his own tax returns. And so, it's a symbol of the abject corruption of this administration. And quite frankly, I would say my personal views of the party that he is representing.
But what does this say about America in terms of whether the country has ceased to be compassionate and fair? Because when you give these massive tax breaks to big corporations and the richest Americans, at the same time, you don't renew the CHIPS program for poor children, they're endangering the health of millions of American children. While the richest people like the Koch brothers are given this massive windfall that they can't possibly need, that's puzzling. I know, I'm not suggesting at all that somehow we become a selfish and less compassionate nation, but certainly a big chunk of the country seems to, I mean, there's at least, 30% or so support Trump. So what explains that, apart from the fact that they may well be in the Fox bubble of delusion?
Well, I think what you have in this circumstance is just this greed, this extreme greed that has taken over basically the Republican Party. That's my personal view. And quite frankly, what we've seen is something that actually, that bill is not supported by a majority of Americans. People don't even know much of what's in it because it's been rammed through so quickly without hearings about the impact or the consequences of so many of these provisions, without the chance for people to weigh in a meaningful way on a bill that included basically handwritten amendments, in the darkened hours, a bill that that didn't even see the light of day until a few weeks ago. And so you have a situation in which the American people have yet to really see all that it does to them. But what many Americans have seen, they don't like, and rightly so. And I think what it also shows is the effect of the partisan districting, the gerrymandering of these congressional districts, in ways that make some of these politicians feel like they're immune from accountability to the ordinary people who they're supposed to represent, their constituents, versus the transnational global corporations who they're not supposed to be representing, who don't vote in elections, who aren't their constituents. And I think it also is a sign of the incredible destruction of the Bush Supreme Court, the five-member Supreme Court that issued the so-called Citizens United decision, a decision that has just unleashed the Koch brothers to spend enormous sums, hundreds of millions of dollars through dark money groups to try to distort the results of our elections, to get politicians like those in Congress who would do their bidding and act against the interests of ordinary people. And so you have both a situation in which you've got a party that is beholden to these corporate donors and funders like the Kochs, who have an extreme agenda themselves and have been trying to popularize it for many years. You have a number of people, although it's a minority, but it is a sort of resistant minority who is believing what Fox News tells them, which is, you know, truly a mistake, since Fox News is a enormous propaganda arm of the Trump team, the Trump administration. And you have a political structure right now which is has been, in essence, disabled from being truly accountable to the people in most instances because of the power of the Kochs and the power of those dark money groups to spend more money than is disclosed in our elections, more money than politicians have to disclose themselves as receiving, but that can be decisive in many, many races in ways that allow these politicians to act with impunity, to disregard the interests of most Americans and the people that they represent.
Well, on top of that, now in the tax bill, they put in a provision that the Koch brothers and these right-wing televangelists in these mega churches can now deduct their dark money that they give to politicians as an expense, a tax-free expense. So that in itself is breathtaking. Lisa Graves, let's take a brief station break and we'll be back in a moment continuing the conversation. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And we're continuing the conversation with Lisa Graves, who served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government as Deputy Assistant Attorney General, in the Justice Department as Chief Counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. Now, it seems, though, something's happened with the Republicans. You know, you had people like Bob Corker and Lindsey Graham being quite critical of Donald Trump, and now they're sucking up to him. And as I mentioned earlier, we discussed how that disgraceful display of sycophancy with the Trump cabinet and then all of the Republicans celebrating the passage of their so-called tax reform bill. Something's happening because rather than, you know, be concerned that their president might be a traitor and that Robert Mueller might end up, you know, he might end up having him leave the Oval Office in an orange jumpsuit or if not in a straitjacket. So it seems that now that we learn that the Justice Department, Jeff Sessions, they're now starting to dig up this phony issue of Uranium One, which is there's absolutely nothing to it, and going back to Hillary Clinton's emails, that they're going to create a kind of alternative witch hunt, which Fox, of course, will publicize to the hilt, and they've essentially created. They're the ones, the drumbeat from Fox has actually forced the creation of this kangaroo court. in the first place. And the purpose, of course, would be to distract us all from the Mueller investigation. And since we're pre-taping this program, Lisa, we don't even know whether Mueller's even been fired. I know last week the minority head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Warner, warned his Senate colleagues about the possibility of Trump shutting down the Mueller investigation. So what do you think has changed? What has emboldened Republicans in this cynical way to join the cover-up with Trump, to stonewall, and then to distract the American people with phony witch hunts against, you know, Hillary Clinton, who, in case they didn't notice, lost the election, and some nonsensical story about a Canadian uranium company being sold to the Russians?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at what's happening in Congress, what you see is that in some ways, Trump is just a pin on that tax bill. He has not orchestrated that bill. He wants to pretend like he's the big hero for signing it. But in fact, that bill was really written by corporations, the corporations that fund those Republicans. And so they are more than happy to deal with Trump to give him this so-called victory, his only supposed legislative victory, which is actually, I think, a Pyrrhic victory, because it's gonna sow even increased disdain for Trump and for the Republicans who voted for it as people learn more about it. To learn about it is not to like it. To know it is not to love it. It's to hate it, because it is really a destructive, profoundly destructive bill. And as you said before, it really takes aim at some of the most vulnerable people in our country, including children, also not funding and taking away funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, which I think most people would agree on a bipartisan basis is an important program. But of course, it's a program that Hillary Clinton pushed into law in the 1990s, pushed for after their initial health care reform failed. So you have this situation in which, in this instance, Trump wanted some sort of victory so he could make this this sort of game show-like promise that he gave everyone a Christmas present in this dreadful bill. And the Republicans wanted a victory for their funders, who aren't Trump, but for the corporations who funded them. But as you said, there's a lot more going on. What you see is this effort to distract with these completely fake, you know, debunked, discredited claims about Hillary Clinton and a uranium sale to a Canadian company tied to Russian interests, a situation in which that sale was approved by a board of people within the Obama administration. Hillary Clinton wasn't on that board. And so you have a completely trumped up, sorry to use that verb, but a completely trumped up set of allegations against Hillary. Meanwhile, you have Donald Trump doing the largest scale back in U.S. history of a national monument in order to give uranium companies more access to precious public lands in Utah. That's actually the real scandal involving uranium in this country, is this wholesale giveaway of our resources to enable mining companies to have increased access to precious lands that should belong to all of us. And then you have the situation in terms of the saber-rattling by Jeanine Pirro on Fox and others who are trying to push this narrative that Mueller can't be trusted, that there's a cabal or a coup. I mean, you have people like Pirro who, in my opinion, is someone who's tainted by the fact that she has a hostility toward the FBI. Her husband was indicted and convicted of tax fraud a number of years ago by the federal government. She's someone who has sought to run against Hillary Clinton. She's sought to run against Clinton administration officials in New York. She's a celebrity over there at Fox who pretends to be a journalist in her supposed interview of Trump, which was really just a love fest. And she's helping to push the rhetoric about Mueller and trying to take him down. Mueller is someone who has been widely respected throughout his career by Republicans and Democrats for his independence. And he's someone who has put together already significant indictments of criminal conduct by people who are in the inner circle, close advisors to Donald Trump. And so you have an extraordinary, exceptionally troubling situation in terms of the corruption of this administration, of Trump and the men surrounding him, and you have a credible investigation being led by really the most well-regarded leader of the FBI in the modern era, and you have a concerted disinformation campaign being spearheaded by the White House and by its lapdogs over at Fox and other assorted hooligans, or at least hooligans in the sense of irresponsible rhetoricians like Newt Gingrich, who are trying to basically discredit Mueller. And as you said, at the time of this taping, at the time your show airs, we won't know. We'll know then whether Trump has done some sort of midnight pre-Christmas firing of Mueller, or whether Mueller's investigation continues. It's an investigation that is the most serious criminal investigation of potential misconduct by an administration in my lifetime and perhaps in the history of the United States.
But since you were Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department and Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lisa Graves, what's your understanding about how successful this purge, this phony coup against what they manufactured coup that they're talking about? And they're blaming the FBI. They've already trashed the CIA, but now they're blaming the FBI. And they've hauled up the new director of the FBI for a whole bunch of hearings last week. And I know in the Justice Department, Sessions has already reassigned two top counterintelligence prosecutors into dead-end jobs. So can they get away with this? Can they basically intimidate the nonpartisan career Justice Department officials and the FBI agents into submission?
Well, I think in this instance, what people have to realize is that the United States House of Representatives investigations committees led by Republicans have basically no credibility. You know, they spent countless millions of our tax dollars trying to make a political witch hunt. What people admitted, some of the leaders of the House admitted, was in fact a political witch hunt over Benghazi to try to discredit Hillary Clinton, to try to beat her in that election. And now you have a House Intelligence Committee, which has been led by a guy who basically went over to the White House to supposedly get information earlier this year that he to try to help the White House. And so, you know, what the House Intelligence Committee does, unfortunately, what the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence does and the House Judiciary Committee does lately has been mostly discrediting themselves. They have shown themselves to be hyper-partisan people who are acting without regard to the rule of law and to just basic norms in terms of whether there's justifiable cause for investigations. I think, you know, from my standpoint, it's worth paying closer attention to what's happening in the Senate. The Senate Intelligence Committee is much more well regarded, is much better regarded. And while it is in Republican hands, it has yet to play the sort of games that the House is more than willing and eager to play. Devin Nunes, the congressman from California, who has had a leadership role over there, is someone who's an extreme partisan, who just is not a credible person when it comes to any rational assessment of anything. You can say the same thing about Congressman Trey, who was the Benghazi guy.
You mean Trey Gowdy?
Yeah, Trey Gowdy. I mean, you look at the cast of characters over in the House, and the House leadership is really one that is not, I think, trustworthy on these matters at all.
Well, Trey Gowdy, of course, has got some serious skeletons in his closet that are about to go public, so he may be joining that list of sexual harassers and gropers. But just in the last couple of minutes, though, the other thing that they're making a big fuss out of, that's a manufactured scandal by Fox News, is the email exchanges between this FBI counterintelligence agent, Peter Strzok, and his girlfriend. And what's extraordinary about that is that, you know, these people in government, the career guys, particularly in the intelligence world, in the FBI and the CIA, they don't really like politicians. They pride themselves for being non-political. So if you really look at Peter Strzok's emails, the whole body of them, not the selective ones that Fox News has seized on, he trashes everybody.
You know,
he doesn't just, you know, trash Trump. He trashes Hillary Clinton. He trashes Bernie Sanders. And what was that guy from Maryland that ran as well? Martin O'Malley. I mean, he got... And, you know, frankly, you know, he's just an American citizen looking at this clown train going by and wondering, you know, he's worried about the fate of the nation. And by the way, he was immediately fired by Mueller. He was immediately fired because Mueller, you know, doesn't want the taint of political bias. And yet this horrible witch hunt proceeds unabated. So at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, you know, when are we going to, in this country, you know, restore some consensus about what is true and what is real?
Well, that's, I mean, that's a great question. You have a situation in which the 30% of the country that apparently is addicted to Fox News and crazy right-wing conspiracy theory radio doesn't even believe the fact that every single intelligence agency in the United States has agreed that Russia tried to interfere in the U.S. election, in the presidential election, and tried to interfere on the side of helping Trump against Hillary Clinton. You know, they weren't interfering to help both of them. And so that's, those are facts. Those are intelligence agencies who don't want to get involved in politics, who don't want to get involved in partisan electoral races, but they have individually each made that assessment. And yet you have a certain percent of the population, a minority, that doesn't believe it. And as you said, in terms of this the faux scandal, the fake scandal over the text messages by this FBI official who's not any, who's not been on Mueller's team for nearly 6 months now. As you point out, he's someone who also didn't leave his First Amendment rights behind when he went to join the government, and he has opinions about politicians, and they're mostly opinions of disdain for politicians from both parties, of about Hillary, about Trump, about others. And the scandal, the so-called scandal, is really that Fox concocted that situation to use only the ones that were critical of Trump to try to paint this false narrative. And I'm sure that some of those loyal Fox listeners have bought into it, because that's what Fox does. It lies to people through omission and through, you know, direct, you know, claims that are not well supported by the facts to basically back up Trump and whatever he wants to do. It's really sort of a dangerous situation we're in which so many people do not have a common factual basis for making decisions about our public policy.
Well, Lisa Graves, I thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Lisa Graves, who has served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back continuing the conversation about 2017 being the year of the woman. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Adele Stan, a journalist based in Washington, D.C., who specializes in covering the intersection of religion and politics. She's currently a weekly columnist for the American Prospect and a contributor to SiriusXM Progress. And her latest article at the American Prospect is On the Road to Kleptocracy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Adele Stan.
Great to be with you, Ian.
Well, thank you, Adele. And in this sort of interregnum between Christmas and the New Year, looking back over the year, to my mind, one of the most significant things that happened this year, and it happened literally the day after Donald Trump's inauguration, was this spontaneous manifestation of millions of women across the United States and around the world protesting and organizing. I mean, the organization of the event itself was sudden and spontaneous. And then gradually throughout this year, you get the impression that women in general are getting more mobilized and more focused on politics. Many, many women are running on the Democratic ticket. And you also have this Me Too movement burgeoning, which is changing the workplace across this country in both corporate America, in the government, in the Congress, and particularly here in Hollywood in the entertainment business.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I think that, you know, women started protesting the day after the inauguration and really haven't stopped since. Just because we don't see the streets filled with women doesn't mean they're not still protesting. And especially, I think we have to say, women of color have been doing just amazing work as ground organizers and keeping the movement going. But women have been the people behind the resistance. And if you look at, you know, even the election of certain men has been, you know, in many ways a woman's project, right? The whole Doug Jones election in Alabama. African American women did so much of the organizing that did the turnout, you know, created the voter turnout that gave Jones that victory. And, you know, I think, you know, we've reached a new moment in American history. It doesn't mean, you know, misogyny is by any means dead and the patriarchy still unfortunately lives, but but it's, things are different.
Well, obviously, you know, you could make the argument that there's Newton's law is at play in the political world. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And
right.
I don't think we've ever had such a reactionary and dangerous and destructive president in the history of this country. And it's certainly not going unnoticed. But is it your sense, though, that, I mean, the divide is already there, the male-female divide in this country between the Democrats and the Republicans. Something like 60% of male Americans vote Republican and about 60-something plus percent of female Americans vote Democrat. So
right.
Do we already have the mummy and daddy party to begin with?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, that's true. But if you break it out by demographics, it gets, you know, by, like, say, racial demographics, it gets more complicated, right? Or even marital status. You know, married women tend to vote Republican, married white women. White women in general, you know, usually, at the very least, a narrow majority will vote Republican. So, you know, it always depends on which women you're talking about in terms of, you know, ascribing a party identity to gender identity. However, I do think that, you know, there's no mistaking that the Republican Party is indeed the party of white patriarchy. That's what it is. That's part of its brand. And in fact, you know, I don't think that people voted for Donald Trump in spite of his misogyny. I think people voted for him in part because of his misogyny, and that includes some white women.
Well, but there are also some white women in Alabama who voted against him because they had daughters. So that leads me to wonder if there is some ripe pickings for the Democrats in terms of disaffected Republicans, because their party has been captured by Stephen Bannon's white nationalists and Tea Party nativists.
Right.
And the traditional Republicans are, you know, strangers in their own land, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's going to get any different. It's going to get worse for them. So I'm wondering whether there is, when you do a sort of an objective analysis of the body politic in this country, you always come to the conclusion that the center of gravity is like center-right in America. So do you think there's any way to establish a kind of new center-right party like Macron did out of nowhere in France?
Mm.
In this case, the Democrats peeling off a whole bunch of disaffected Republicans, or is the landscape simply just too tribal?
I think the landscape is so roiled at this point. I mean, it's undulating, that there's no need for the Dems to go center-right to pick up disaffected Republicans. I think that, and I don't believe that America is essentially a center-right nation. If you poll people on their actual positions on things like what we would have come to be known in pundit land as entitlements, whether it's, you know, Social Security or Medicare or even a social safety net for the poor, people, you know, majorities of people come down in favor of those positions. You know, you would think America was, you know, on the verge of a socialist revolution. It's just that when you get into the, as you say, the tribal party identities, that people align themselves differently. So I think that Democrats would do well to, you know, stick to the left positions of you know, equal rights for all people, of protecting the safety net, of trying to go for universal health insurance. I think I really don't think it's pie in the sky to think that Democrats can peel off swing voters with those positions, especially given, you know, the recoiling that people who are from you know, polite white society are having at this moment vis-a-vis Trump. We saw this in Alabama, where educated white people went for Doug Jones, and many of them are people who are believed to have voted Republican before that. So I think that the trick for the Democrats is not to go seeking, you know, for these elusive Republicans, but to enlarge their own electorate by turning out their coalition. And that's, you know, that's what we saw happen in Alabama. And although that was, you know, a unique circumstance in certain ways, you know, turning out your own people is a time-tested model. And it's something that the Hillary Clinton campaign did not do well.
And again, I'm speaking with Adele Stan, who's a journalist based in Washington, D.C., who specializes in covering the intersection of religion and politics. She's currently a weekly columnist for The American Prospect and a contributor to SiriusXM Progress. And her latest article at The American Prospect is On the Road to Kleptocracy. So in terms, though, of, I mean, there's no question that I mentioned earlier that a number of women are entering the political fray on the Democratic side. And there's a 25-year-old young woman as the head of the Democratic Party in Oklahoma who's managing to flip a bunch of local and state seats in a very red state. So something's happening out there. How do you think the Me Too, you know, movement plays into this? Because you can't help feeling that it's almost, by definition, an expression of women's liberation.
It's an expression of women's liberation. It's an expression of women finding their power. And I think that that's where those two things go together, Ian. I think you're quite correct in your observation that these two things are related. But I do believe that the relationship is with women finding their power. Women are so accustomed to not being heard that they often have not spoken up, that we often have not spoken up. There's a new generation of women who are not going to settle for that. You know, it's interesting, even, you know, feminists of my generation, you know, would have found it unthinkable to you know, to go up such powerful up against such powerful man as, say, Harvey Weinstein. I mean, what Anita Hill did in taking on Clarence Thomas at the time that she did it in the early 1990s it boggles the mind to think about how alone she was at that moment. You know, so I do think it is about women claiming their power. I think they, you know, women are understanding that they are the people who turn out the vote and who organize their communities. And, you know, they're ready to claim some credit for that.
But given that the sexual predators and sexual harassers, in terms of the ones that have been busted in politics, are pretty even, aren't they, in terms of the number of Democrats and number
sure.
of Republicans?
Yeah, patriarchy knows no party.
So I guess the difference between the Democrats and Republicans is on the other side. It'd be the closeted gay men. The Republicans seem to have a lock on that one.
Yes, I think you're quite right.
Right. But on the other side, their equal opportunity backside pinches, right? I mean, old Tangerine Hair, Strom Thurmond, he used to regularly, you know, like Barbara Boxer and all the women in the Senate, he was always grabbing them in the elevators, you know.
Right.
I mean, they sort of put up with it for the longest time as though it was just bad behavior or even expectedly bad behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But what changed that? What was that turning point?
I think the turning point was the election of Donald Trump after the, you know, the Access Hollywood tape of him, you know, and talking about grabbing women's genitals, you know, came out, and he got elected anyway. And he got elected anyway because a lot of people thought Hillary Clinton had it locked up. And, you know, and I have to say that there were some very, you know, what people we think of as good progressive journalists who were advancing that narrative because they were too smart by half. In looking at the polls and not looking at how the landscape was changing around Trump. So the fact of this guy getting elected with that history and then setting about paying off his religious right buddies who turned out their voters for him by giving away women's rights.
And by putting the Pence on the ticket.
Yes, and that's exactly right. Mike Pence is, you know, I mean, that's his brand, is all about ending a woman's reproductive rights and putting her back in her place. I think that the rage, the combined rage with having seen Hillary Clinton treated the way that she was treated by male journalists, throughout the campaign, and several of whom, by the way, turned out to be sexual assaulters and harassers.
Matt Lauer being high on the list, right?
Very high on the list. His sexism in that that forum that he moderated was just, you know, on display, where he talked over her, he wouldn't let her answer a question, and all he wanted to talk about was her emails. And then he went real soft on Donald Trump. Mark Halperin was another one. The next day, Mark Halperin was on Morning Joe talking about how terrible Hillary Clinton performed and how great Matt Lauer was as a moderator. I mean, these are the people who, you know, mediated this election for people. I mean, the rage that women have been building in women, and then, you know, folks who did not go to the polls because they assumed that Hillary Clinton had it locked up. I mean, there were a fair number of those people who turned out in the streets on January 20th, you know, and they're not going to be fooled again. So I think that you've had this rage building among women for a year now, for more than a year, and there was just a moment where it just took one woman to go after one powerful man and the dam broke.
Well, when you mentioned the Access Hollywood tape being a turning point, Adele Stan, of course, interestingly enough, something else was at play there, and that is another infamous sexual harasser who's living in the Ecuadorian embassy in London and working for the Russians.
Yes.
He dutifully put out this data dump, WikiLeaks data dump, of the Podesta emails the very next day after the Access Hollywood tape broke in order to try and help Trump out and take the Access Hollywood story off the headlines.
Yes, of course, we're talking about Julian Assange, and yes, that was just an exquisite bit of timing, wasn't it?
Mm.
You're absolutely right. I think it's very difficult to see any other explanation for the way that all happened, and it was, you know, long known that Assange has contempt for Hillary Clinton, to which he is entitled, but, you know, he's not entitled to work with the Russians to intervene in our election. And that is an important part of the story. You know, the Assange piece of it that has gotten a shorter shrift in the standard year in review pieces, because it's now the story is about Putin and about the investigations in the Congress and about the special prosecutor and all of that, and we've kind of sort of forgotten about Assange.
Well, it's interesting to note that at the infamous table at the 10th anniversary of RT's, at which Michael Flynn sat next to Vladimir Putin, and across the table from him was Jill Stein, who was recently interrogated by the Senate Intelligence Committee, and who might well alone have flipped the election for,
that's right,
for Trump in those three key states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Also sitting at that table was Julian Assange's father. So,
you know, I wasn't aware of that, and that's just a stunning fact.
Well, I'm just saying that it's
stunning fact.
This whole thing's in your face, this Russian Trump story, but
none of what the Trump administration, what Trump or his administration is subtle. There's nothing subtle. I mean, they are robbing the nation blind in front of our faces, and laughing while they do it, and the Congress will help them do it and is helping them do it.
So what's your explanation for that? Because some of them have to know, people like Lindsey Graham, certainly, and McCain and others, they have to know. The United States Intelligence Services, all 16 or whatever, they don't agree on just about anything. There's all kinds of rivalries going on. So when all of them get together and say, yes, this happened, nobody in the government doesn't believe that.
Right.
But somehow these Republicans and these keep Tea Party guys are totally in denial. And so I'm wondering why the Republicans who know or who suspect that their president is a traitor are going along with this. Is it because they're afraid of the Bannon wing, or are they just doing damage control, figuring, well, if it comes out that our president and our leader of our party is a traitor, we're going to get wiped out in 2018, and let's see if we can stick with the cover up until then?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on, Ian. I think one is, you're quite right. They are afraid of Bannon, especially in the Senate, where, Bannon has pledged to run primary challenges to virtually every Republican senator.
Right. But his choice of candidates is somewhat lacking.
He may have sullied his reputation as a kingmaker with the outcome in the Alabama election. It'll be interesting to see if his sugar daddy, Robert Mercer of the Renaissance Technologies hedge fund fortune, will continue to back him in these quests. But I think the other thing you can't let the Republican establishment off the hook. I mean, they're doing the bidding of their donors, and their donors, and not just the direct donors to their campaigns, but the whole what has become the right-wing Republican project, executed by the likes of the Koch brothers and the DeVoses and people like that. Those people are in on the take. And Mike Pence is a Koch brothers guy. They basically created him in terms of his political career. Betsy DeVos is in the administration. There's any number of Koch-linked characters in the administration. And at this point, to be a Republican running for national office requires the backing of the Koch brothers network, at the very least, because they've created this extra party infrastructure that now all the candidates rely on, because it was superior to that of the Republican Party. It was quite clever what the Koch brothers did with that. So the ground game is put out, the voters are turned out by Americans for Prosperity and the evangelical wing. The data operation that is used, voter data, all that number crunching and algorithms and all that stuff that is used to game out who's going to turn out to the polls for your candidate from which neighborhoods. That operation is owned by the Kochs. It's called I-360. These candidates don't even bother to use the RNC's operation anymore. So at this point, you know, the Koch brothers have not yet pulled the plug on Donald Trump. Whether or not they will, I don't know. I have suspected that he may be more vulnerable now that the tax bill has passed. He may be more vulnerable to some wavering by the Koch brothers. But, you know, until they decide he's gotten for them everything they've ever wanted, he remains in place and everybody else is going to fall into line.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, Adele Stan, let's turn back to women and how it looks as if the bad guys are no longer winning. They've been winning for most of this year.
Yeah.
I think Alabama was a turning point, and it wasn't just that the good guy won, but the good women got behind him, as you pointed out. The African-American women showed up and did the job. My sense is that you're going to have at least three women running for president on the Democratic side, Amy Klobuchar, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Elizabeth Warren. I don't know on the Republican side. They certainly
may very, very well have a woman try to challenge.
Oh, I know. I was going to say they're welcome to run Nikki Haley or even Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Oh, dear. I don't know I can cover that election. That would be so gruesome.
Right. But just in the last minute, what's your sense of the likelihood that someday soon a woman will become president of the United States?
Oh, I don't. It's hard to know how soon. I think it's quite possible. I do worry that I've always felt it was probably more likely that a Republican would be the first woman president. Just, you know, because it's she would be seen as less upending of the social order. So I think that I wish I was a little bit more optimistic. I think a lot depends on how things go for Donald Trump and whether or not he succeeds in smashing the institutions of democracy to the point where he cannot be gotten rid of.
Well, Adele Stan, I thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate your perspective on the year that's ended and your, I'd say, guarded optimism about the year that's ahead of us.
Yes, we must resist. It's always great to be with you, Ian.
Well, thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Adele Stan, a journalist based in Washington, D.C., who specializes in covering the intersection of religion and politics. She's currently a weekly columnist for The American Prospect and contributor to SiriusXM Progress. And her latest article at The American Prospect is On the Road to Kleptocracy. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.